the bottom of Lamed Beis Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom towards the end of the line. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ila, Beferish Ribsa Torah Edim Zomimin Lisashlumin. Again, this is part of a larger discussion in the Gemara. So the Gemara points out that the Torah explicitly states that the punishment for Edim Zomimin is that they have to pay. So again, the Gemara is going to explain. So the Gemara asks, Heichan Ribsa Torah, where does the Torah say this? So Michti, Ksiv Vasisim Lo Kasher Zomam Lasos Liachiv, Yad Biad Lamali, Davar Hanitin Miad Liad, Umainihu Mamon. The Torah already tells us that the punishment for Edom Zomim is that you give to them whatever they try to do. But the Torah then goes on to explain that, well, if they try, you know, it says Yad Biad, Regel Beragel, Shein Beshein. It starts to specify all the different, you know, variations of how Edom Zomim can play out. Why does the Torah have to specify Yad Biad? In other words, Yad Biad is just an extension of the idea that you give to the Edom Zomim what they try to do. So the Gemara says, no, Yad Biad is teaching me that it's a Davar Hanitin Miad. It's something which is transactionary, which is given from hand to hand, namely money. So that's how we know that the punishment for Edom Zomimin is going to be money. Then the Gemara says, Chovel b'chaveru nami, michti, ksiv kasher asa, kenya yaselo, keni nasen bo lamali, davar sheyesh bo nesino, mayni hu mamon. The Gemara has an almost identical drasha when it comes to chovel b'chaveru, the prohibition against injuring someone, against harming someone. So the Gemara says that the Torah tells us at the end of Parshas Emor that if I harm another person, so whatever I did to him is going to be done to me. Kasher in the very next pasuk in Parshas Emor, it says the expression "keni nasenbo," that so is done to you. What's being added by that expression? We already know that whatever you did is done to you. The answer is again that word nesina teaches me that the punishment or the reparations you pay for injuring someone is paid up in the form of money. Okay, then the Gemara says v'Reb Yochanan my time alo amar kula. This goes back to a whole discussion that came up on yesterday's daf and machlokes between Reb Yochanan and Ula about the following issue. Ula back on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph had this theory that any time that you have a situation where there's a theoretical obligation to pay money and to get malchus, you always pay and you do not get malchus. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says that as long as there's hasra, you're going to get malchus and you're not going to pay. So the question is, why does Rabbi Yochanan not assume like Ula that you pay instead of malchus? So the Gemara says, Im kein bitalta ervasa chosecha lo segale chovel bachaveru nami im kein bitalta lo yosef pen yosef edem zomimin nami im kein bitalta v'hayom ben hakos harasha. So Rabbi Yochanan turns to Ula and says that if you're going to insist on payment instead of malchus in these types of halachos, what you're doing effectively is undermining the ability to apply these halachos. For example, when the Torah talks about the prohibition against having relations with one sister, the Torah says you're not allowed to uncover the erva of your sister. So if you're going to make the argument that let's say, for example, the case of Achoso is also when she's a Nara, she also happens to be between the age of 12 and 12 and a half, and you have that theoretical Kanas that we spoke a lot about at the beginning of the Perek. So if you're going to make the argument that like Ula, that you always pay and the payment overrides the obligation of Malkus, then you're never going to have a scenario, says Reb Yochanan, where you're going to fulfill that lav of Ervas Achoscha lo Segale, because any time that your sister is between 12 and 12 and a half, and if the brother went ahead and raped her, so according to Ula, he's only going to have to pay. He's not going to have to be chay of malchus, but that undermines the whole concept of the halacha. The halacha is formulated as a lav, and lav and typically carried with them a chay of malchus. Similarly, when the Torah talks about the isser of injuring someone, so the source for that you cannot harm another person is derived from a pasuk in the context of malchus. When the Torah talks about, let's say a person is chay of malchus for violating some avera, so we know that the shoter, right, he was the guy who actually executed the malchus. He was the one who actually administered the malchus. So the Torah warns the shoter, make sure you don't give the guy more malchus than he actually deserves. So if he only deserves 39 lashes, you can't go above and beyond and give him 40 or 41. And if you do, and you injure him as a result, the halacha is that the shoter is chayav for that. He's going to actually be chayav malchus for giving malchus to the person unnecessarily, giving him more lashes than he actually deserves. That's the general source for the idea of chovel b'chaver, that you're not allowed to unnecessarily harm or injure another person. If you're going to argue that the punishment for injuring is always just paying the guy out, so you've undermined that halacha as well. And then the third halacha regarding Edom Zomimin, the Torah also formulates the punishment for Edom Zomimin, v'haya in ben hakos harasha. The word hakos implies malchus, implies lashes, and again, if you're going to argue that the punishment should be mamon, you're undermining that halacha. That's Rabbi Yochanan's deflection of Ula, to which Ula responds, the Gemara says, Ela Edom Zomimin efshar l'kiyuma b'ven grusho ven chalutza, chova b'chaver onami ika l'kiyuma kagon she'iko ha'kal she'in b'shvep pruta, achos onami ika l'kiyuma b'achos ovo geres. Comes the Gemara and says that really you can defend Ula's position by pointing out that there are scenarios in which these three halachos can still be preserved. The concept of malchus can still be preserved, even though in general, we say that mammon is actually the optimal way to solve this problem. So for example, when it comes to Edom Zomim, so we know typically the punishment for Edom Zomim is going to be mammon. However, as we know from the opening Mishnah of Maseches Makos, a very famous Mishnah, that if the Edom are testifying, let's say for example, that a person we think is a Kohen is really a Chalal, he's really a Ben Grusha or a Ben Chalutza, and it turns out that they're Edom Zomim, so you can't make the Edom into Chalalim. Why that is a whole discussion in the beginning of Maseches Makos, but suffice it to say, the punishment in that scenario was going to be Malkus. So there is a scenario in which Malkus is the punishment that's administered for Edom Zomim. Similarly, when it comes to Chovel Bachavir, when it comes to injuring someone, so the Gemara explains that although it's true that in general the punishment for injuring someone is that you have to pay the value of the damages that you caused them, but let's say the damage was so minimal that it was worth less than a pruta's worth of injury, so then the punishment is going to be Malkus. And finally, when it comes to the case of Achoso, so let's say, for example, if the brother raped his sister, but the sister was already a Bogeris, she was no longer a Nara, so there's no longer the concept of a Kenas. As we spoke about in the beginning of this Perek, that Kenas that you give for raping a girl is only in that time frame when she's a Nara. So once the sister was already over the age of 12 and a half, if the man raped her, the punishment is simply going to be Malkus. There is no other recourse. So Ula's basic answer to Rabbi Yochanan is that there are scenarios in which Malkus is the punishment administered. Just in general, is going to be mamon. Okay, so then the Gemara says, "Amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan, haytachas asherina miboy lechida abaye." To Amar Abaye, Amar Kra, tachas asherina, haytachas asherina michlal deika bosha sufagam. Veula nafkale midarava. To Amar Rava, Amar Kra, v'nasan hayeshashochi vima lavi hanara chamishim kasef hanas shchiva chamishim michlal deika bosha sufagam. So the Gemara quotes a machlokas now between Rabbi Yochanan and Rava as to the source. Between Abaye and Rava as to the source for the idea that although it's true that in certain cases, you're not going to technically have to pay that kenas for raping the girl. Let's say she's a ketana, let's say she's a bogeres, she's already beyond that time frame or beyond that window of being a nara. There are other payments that you do have to pay in these types of cases, namely boshas and pagam, which is basically the fact that you've now devalued her, she's no longer a virgin, and also the shame that you've brought onto her family, that's referred to as boshas and pagam. So how do you know that you have to pay boshas and pagam? So it's a machluk, is what the source is between Abaye and Rav. According to Abaye, it's derived from the pasuk tachas asher ina. Since you raped her, since you violated her. So the Gemara says, you see from that expression that there's also additional payments for boshas and pagam. Ula derives it from based on Rava from the earlier part of that pasuk, which says that the rapist has to pay the father of the girl 50 shekel. And since the Torah formulates it by using the terminology hashochev ima, the man who lied with her, so you see that you pay the 50 shekel for the pleasure that was incurred through the rape, but then there's an additional payment, as we just noted, for boshas and pagat. So fine. Then the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer and Omer, Edom Zomim mamona mishalmei umilka lo lakem yishim delav b'nei asranin. Who comes Rabbi Eliezer and says that in reality, Edom Zomim are always going to pay, and they're not going to be chayiv malchus. The reason being is because, basically for technical reasons, you can never give malchus to Edom Zomim. Why not? Because Edom Zomim are never subject to hasra'ah. You can never give a person a bodily punishment like malchus or misas bezdin without prior warning. Now, why can't I warn Edom Zomim? So the Gemara explains, Amar Rava, Teda, Nisrei Behu Emas. When exactly would you theoretically have warned the Edom Zomim? Nisrei Behu Meikara Amri Ishalin. If you're going to warn them prior to their testimony, they can just claim that they forgot the Hasra. Nisrei Behu Bishas Maisa Parsheva La Masadeh. If you warn them as they're testifying, so even if they're telling the truth, they're going to back off and not testify at all. If they hear this warning clinging in the back of their head that if you testify falsely, if you give, if you become Edom Zomim, you're going to get the punishment you tried to do. Even if they're telling the truth, they're going to be a little bit wishy-washy about wanting to testify. And then the Gemara says, Nisri b'hu levesof ma'idahavahava. And if you warn them after the fact, so that's already too late. So, in other words, when exactly would this hasra theoretically have been issued? So the Gemara pushes back. The Gemara says, maskef la baye v'nisri b'hu besof k'dei dibur. Abai says, why can't you warn them toch kedei dibur after their testimony? We know that in halacha, whenever something is done betoch kedei dibur within that very, very short time frame, when if a person can say shalom alecha rebbe yumor, the very, very quick, couple of seconds to say, peace be unto you, my teacher, my master, that those 3 seconds, whatever it is, that's still considered to be within the same time frame of the action. So let's say the eidim finish, and the second after they finish, you go ahead and say, by the way, make sure that you don't testify in a way that you're going to become eidim zomim. Why is that not a valid hasra? Then the Gemara says again, maskiflo ravacha berei de ravika v'nisri behume ikara v'nirmas behu ramuzi. Another suggestion, says the Gemara, is that really you can give them the hasra prior to, in other words, before they testify, and during, throughout the testimony, you can hint to them, you can remind them, you can allude to them, by the way, don't testify falsely, don't become Edom Zomen. Now, that's a little bit more toned down than, you know, the Edom yelling at them in the middle of their testimony, make sure you don't become Edom Zomen. That's gonna possibly deter them from wanting to testify, but giving a general warning and then kind of hinting to it and not being so aggressive about it, that might not necessarily deter them. So the Gemara says there are two very, very valid options, or there are two possible ways to actually give hasra to Edom Zomen. So why is it so impossible? So the Gemara says, you're right. So the Gemara says, Hadar Amar Abaye, Lav Nilsehi Damer. Comes Abaye and says, what I said before is incorrect. Isal Kedaitach Edom Zomen Srichen Hasra. If you're going to argue that Edom Zomen really require hasra, Kilo Masrinam Hu Lakatlinan Lu, and therefore, if I do not give them hasra, I cannot put them to death as Edom Zomen. The problem is, Miiko Midi, the Inhu Bo Katil Bela Hasra, the Inhu Bo Hasra, Habainan Vasisam Lokasher Zaman Lasos Liachav Aleka. The Gemara says, the very institution of Edom Zomen presupposes that you give to them whatever they try to do to you. That's like the ABCs of Edom Zomen. Whatever they try to do, you do to them. The problem is that Edom Zomen, by its very definition, they are lying about their testimony. So for example, let's say two Edom come into Beis Din and claim that Reuven killed Shimon, and then before anyone can figure things out, Reuven is put to death. And then it turns out later on that actually Reuven did not kill Shimon, or that the Edom were somewhere else, right? So these Edom are attempting to put Reuven to death without a hasra. Why is there no hasra for Reuven? Because Reuven never actually killed Shimon. That's the whole point of Edom's Zomen, is that they're actually lying about the fact that they were there to witness the testimony. And yet now you're going to turn around and tell me, well, in order to kill the Edom's Zomen, they need hasra. That's a violation of the din of Kasher Zomen. The whole point of Kasher Zomen is do to them what they tried to do to you. They tried to kill Reuven without a hasra because obviously Reuven didn't kill anybody, because that's the whole point of them being Edom Zomen, is that they were lying about this. So they're trying to kill Reuven without a hasra. So to now turn around and insist that they get a hasra is a violation of the din of Kasher Zama. So the Gemara pushes back on this. The Gemara says, Maskiflo Rav Sama Berei de Rav Yirmiya. Elameata ben Grusha uven Chalutza delami Kasher Zamam kamis rabe liboy hasra. So what about the exception to the case? Remember we mentioned earlier that although in general the punishment for Edom Zomen should be mamon, there were certain exceptions. As we pointed out from the famous case in the beginning of Maseches Makos, if two Edom try to claim that a person is a chalal, they try to claim that someone we think is a kohen is really a ben grusha or a ben chalutza. So the only recourse is to give them malchus. Again, why that is, why we can't make them into chalal, and that's a whole discussion in the beginning of Maseches Makos. But the bottom line is that that's the din. Is that the din is that you give the Edom malchus. Now, that malchus is clearly not emanating from the din of Kasher Zaman. It can't, because they never tried to give the guy malchus. They never tried to give this guy we think is a kohen malchus. All they tried to do is to claim that he's a chalal. So the fact that you're giving the Edom Zomen malchus for their false testimony that a person is a chalal is clearly just some kind of an external halacha. It's not related to Kasher Zomam. Now, if the malchus you're giving to the Edom Zomen in the case of a chalal is not related to Kasher Zomam, so now you should require hasra. Because remember, the whole reason why we think hasra was not needed was merely for a technicality that it doesn't line up with Kasher Zomam. It's not what they tried to do. But they never tried to give the guy malchus in the first place. That wasn't their intent. Their intent was to make the person into a chalal, so maybe now hasra should in fact be required. So the Gemara says, no. Amar kram mishpat achad yelacha mishpat hashav lechulchem. Comes the Torah and says otherwise. The end of Parshas Emor, the Torah says, there's one din across the board. That's Gzeiras HaKasam. Mishpat Achad Yihyeh Lachem. That everyone has the same standards, and even though it's true that technically speaking, Hasra should not have been required here, but nonetheless, the Torah tells us otherwise. Mishpat Hashav L'Chulchem, that the din is that even in this case, Hasra is not going to be needed. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rav Shisha Berei Derev Idi Amar, Chovel Bachaver Unami, Mamona Mishalim, Umilka Lolake Mehacha, V'chi Yinatzu Anashim V'nagifu Yisha HaRav Yatzu Yiladeha, the Amar Rabbi Elazar b'matzus shebemisa hakasim edaber dichsiv v'imason yehyeh v'nasatan nefesh tachas nefesh. Comes the Gemara and says that when it comes to the case of chovel b'chaveru, of injuring another person, so the punishment is that you have to pay the value of the damages as opposed to getting malchus. How do we know that? Because in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah talks about a famous case of two men who are fighting, and in the middle, a pregnant woman walks through, and they strike the pregnant woman and cause her to have a miscarriage. Now, the question is, what are the details of this case? So, according to Rabbi Elazar, the case is as follows, that what's called a matzus shebemisa, a quarrel that involves death. So, what does that mean exactly? So what the Pasuk in Mishpatim teaches us is that v'im asoni hiyeh, there's a fatality, meaning to say, if the two men who are fighting kill the pregnant woman, in addition to her having a miscarriage, obviously, so then they get put to death. V'nasata nefesh takas nefesh, they get get Mises Bezdin for killing the woman, and they are exempt from paying what's called the Deme Velados, the value of the fetus. Because a fetus is not technically considered a life for the purposes of these halachos, therefore, they are exempt from paying because of the famous rule of Kimle B'derab Amine. Since they're Chai of Misa for killing the woman, they are exempt from paying for the Deme Velados, and obviously, if they did not kill the woman, then they're going to be Chai to pay for the Deme Velados. So the Gemara now has to clarify. If there was no Hasra prior to these two men fighting, then why are they getting put to death? So the Gemara says, "El pshita da asrubei umusrul davar chomer having musrul davar hakal." For Amar Rachamana, "Velo yia asona no sheyanish." It must be then that they did get hasra. They were warned, "Don't fight, don't quarrel, don't try to kill each other, because if you do, you're going to be chayiv misa." Now, included in that hasra, says the Gemara, when they were warned for the more stringent thing, they were warned not to kill someone. So included in that warning is also not to injure, not to damage, not to cause not to cause monetary or bodily harm. So the Gemara says, when they then go ahead and they only cause the woman to have a miscarriage and they don't kill the woman, so of course they're also going to be chayav to pay the value of the fetus, because that was subsumed, that was included in the original hasra. And the Torah says explicitly that if there's no fatality, if the woman is not killed, then they have to pay the value of the fetus. So the Gemara pushes back. The Gemara says, Maskeflo Ravashi, Mimai de Musul Davar Chomer Havi Musul Davar Akal Demalohi. I'm sorry, the Gemara says, Demalohavi. In other words, how do we know that just because you're warned for something more severe, that automatically includes something less severe? In other words, if I warn you not to kill someone, why is it automatically assumed that you also know not to injure someone? They're two separate things. And the Gemara says, "Im tim salomar havin." Even if you want to argue that they should be included, mimai demisa chamura dilma malkus chamur. The Amar Rav ilmoli nagdua lachananim yishav azaria palchu letzalma. The Gemara says, and even if you want to argue that a more severe type of a warning does include a less severe one, well, how do you know that death is considered more severe than malkus? Why would I think otherwise? Because Rav is a famous statement that we know. That in Sefer Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah refused to bow to Nebuchadnezzar's idol. They were thrown into the furnace, into the Kivshan HaEish, and they survived that as a nace. But the Gemara says that, let's say, instead of threatening them with death, Nebuchadnezzar threatened them with endless torture, with endless lashes. So then the Gemara says that they actually would have bowed down, because it's one thing to be valiant and say, you know what, I'm gonna be put to death, Al Kiddush Hashem. That's a one-time act. It's a difficult thing to do, obviously, but it's a one-time thing. If the other option is either you bow, or you're going to be endlessly tortured, that's much more difficult. So the Gemara says that, in fact, it turns out that lashes is actually much more severe than death. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Amar le Rav Sama bere de Rav Asi le Rav Ashi, v'amri le Rav Sama bere de Rav Ashi le Rav Ashi, v'lo shani lecha bin hakashi yesh lekitza lehakashi lekitza. The Gemara says there's clearly a difference between that scenario of Nebuchadnezzar, where he's threatening them with endless torture, versus a finite number of lashes, right? You know that the maximum number of lashes you can get is 39. So okay, you know in your head that you're going to 39 lashes. It's going to hurt a little bit, but okay, at the end of the day, you're going to be done. As opposed to Nebuchadnezzar, where in theory he could have tortured them, ad infinitum. Okay, then the Gemara says, Maskeflora Yaakov min harp code hanicha l'rabbanan da amri nefesh mamish el l'rebi da amar mamon ma'ika l'meimar. Now the Gemara references a famous machlokas that appears in Maseches Sanhedrin about the following. Let's say Reuven is intending to kill Shimon, and instead he accidentally kills Levi. So the question now is Reuven chayiv misa for killing Levi? So that's a machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbanan in Maseches Sanhedrin. That's what the Gemara calls niskavin laharo gezeh v'hara gezeh. You tried to kill Shimon and instead you killed Levi. So the question is, what's the punishment? So according to the Rabbanan, you get Misa. Because since at the end of the day, you were warned not to kill, even though it happened to be the wrong person, you're still Chayiv Misa. But according to Rebbe, it's not true. Rebbe says you're only Chayiv Misa if everything lines up. You were warned not to kill Shimon, and you killed Shimon. But if you kill Levi, then he says you have to pay the value of Levi to his Yorshim, obviously, but you are not going to be Chayiv Misa for killing. Okay, so the Gemara now says, if that's true, that according to the Rabbanan, that, in other words, again, according to the Rabbanan, so the Gemara makes a lot of sense that you're going to be Chayiv Misa. But according to Rebbe, if you ended up killing the wrong person, that you're only going to have to pay the value of the money. So the question is, how do we then derive the halacha of chovel b'chaveiro? Meaning, again, the whole point the Gemara was trying to make earlier is that in the case of chovel b'chaveiro, even when there was hasra, even when you were warned not to harm someone, you still only have to pay. But according to Rebbe, how do we derive that according to him? Because according to Rebbe, that's the standard to begin with. You're always going to have to pay unless the hasra, unless unless the action was carried out properly. So let's say, for example, the case of the two people who are fighting. So presumably, Reuven wasn't planning to kill the pregnant woman. He was planning to kill Shimon. That was the whole point of the fight. They're fighting with each other. It happened to be that that Rachel walked through in the middle, and they happened to kill her by accident. So according to Rebbe, how do we then derive the halacha of chovel b'chaveiro that you have to pay from that? So the Gemara says no. Elo amar of Yaakov min harpkod mishmei derava meacha im yakum behes halich b'chutz al mishantov nika hamakem. In the beginning of Mishpatim, the Torah says that let's say a person injures someone. So the Torah says if the guy recovers from his injuries and is able to walk on his own, so then the guy who struck him is going to be vindicated. So the Gemara asks v'chisala al daitcha shezem halich b'shug v'zene harad. Of course he's going to be vindicated. What, you think that the guy who struck him, if the guy he struck survived, why on earth would you kill the person who struck him? The person survived. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela malamid shechov shenoso, v'imis katlinan le, v'ilamis shifto yitain v'rapo yirape. The Gemara says, what you do is, if Reuven went ahead and injured Shimon in such a way where Shimon had to be hospitalized, and it was unclear if he was going to survive the injuries, so Reuven has to now be incarcerated until we figure out what's going to happen to Shimon. If Shimon dies, then you kill Reuven for murdering Shimon. If Shimon survives, then obviously Reuven goes free, but he's going to have to pay the hospital bills and Shimon's loss of work, etc. So the Gemara says, "Hey chidami, idola asru be amai miktil." So if there was no hasra, why are we killing Reuven? Elab shita da asru be umbasru la davar chamer musru la davar akal v'amar rachamana shivto yitain v'rapo yirapei. Obviously, there was hasra. And included in the more stringent hasra of not killing Shimon is the lesser hasra not to injure him. And if you do, you're going to have to pay the value of his medical bills and of his loss of work, etc. So again, the Gemara asks, "Maskefla Ravashi, mi ma'id demusul davar chamer havi musul davar akal dama lo havi ve'im timsul lomar havi mi ma'id demisa chamura dama malkus chamer dama ravil mali nagdu alachanani mishav azaria polchu letzalma amar le ravsama breid ravasi le ravashi v'amri le ravsama breid ravashi le ravashi v'lo shani lechavin akashi yesh lekitzo lahakashi lekitzo." So the Gemara basically just quotes again that whole story that we had earlier, where the Gemara said, well, maybe the more severe Hasra doesn't include the less one. And even if it does, who says that Misa is more severe? Because what about Hanani, Mishael, and Azari? And again, the Gemara says, yeah, but endless torture is different than a finite number of lashes. So then the Gemara pushes back, Maskeflor of Mari, Mimai Divimazid Vinika Miktala, Dilma Bishogig Vinika Migalus. The Gemara says, hang on a second. When the Pasuk of Mishpatim says Vinika Hamake, that if, let's say, Shimon recovers from those injuries that Reuven administered, so the Torah says Vinika Hamake, that Reuven goes off scot-free. So we assume that meant that he's now exempt from being put to death because he tried to purposefully kill Shimon. Maybe that's not what the pasuk meant at all. Maybe the pasuk meant that he accidentally killed, that he accidentally tried to kill Shimon, and now when Shimon recovers, he's puter from going to Golus. That's what the pasuk means. V'nika hamake doesn't mean that, in other words, and again, when the Gemara said that we lock him up, that means we send him to the Ir Miklat, and we await and see what happens to Shimon. So the Gemara says, right, Kasha, that's a good question. Again, the Gemara says, maybe that is a possible way to read the pasuk in Mishpat. Okay, then the Gemara says, Reish Lakish Amar, Hamani Rabbi Meir, he da'amar loke umishalim. So this goes back to a discussion earlier in the Gemara, where again, the Mishnah told us, again, the opening Mishnah of the Perek said that if one had relations with his sister when she was a Nara during that frame of, that time frame between 12 and 12 and a half, that you have to pay a Kanas. So that's only going to be true according to Reb Meir, because Reb Meir is basically the one who more or less denies Kimle. Again, we'll see as we go on throughout the Perek, maybe in certain cases he accepts the principles of Kimle, but at least for now we're going to assume that Reb Meir holds that there are cases where you can both get Malkus and also have to pay. So if it's true that that which the Mishnah said, that a person who raped his sister while she was a Nara gets Malkus and also has to pay the kanas, if that's only Rabbi Meir talking, so I Rabbi Meir afilu bito nami. If that's the case, then the same should be true when it comes to a daughter. Because when it comes to a daughter, the punishment for rape, for relations with the daughter is misa. So presumably Rabbi Meir should say the same thing there as well. That even though you're chayiv misa, you still have to pay. So the Gemara says maybe not. V'chi tema Rabbi Meir loka umishalim islay mesu mishalim leislay. Maybe you'll argue that Rabbi Meir basically accepts kimle halfway. In other words, yes, it's true that Rabbi Meir holds you can get malchus and pay, but maybe when it comes to misa, so then the break. In other words, then we have to pump the brakes there. In other words, maybe there we say, if you're chayav misa, so then we're not going to make you pay. The Gemara says, but that's not true. V'lo, v'hasanya, gadav etavach b'shabes, gadav etavach la'avoras kochavim, gadav sharan iskal utfacho, mishalim tashlu me'arbav v'chamisha divra me'er v'chamim potri. There's a famous machlokes that appears in a few places in Shabbos, in Chulin, in Masechet Bava Kama, about the following. Let's say a guy went ahead and he stole an animal, and he slaughtered the animal on Shabbos, or he slaughtered it for Avodah Zarah, or he slaughtered a shor haniskal. A shor haniskal is an ox which was basically decreed to be put to death because it gored too many people. That case we're going to leave on the side for now because that case is actually a little bit more tangential. But let's go with the first two cases. A guy stole on and slaughtered an animal on Shabbos or for avodah zarah. So the Gemara says that the din is that according to Reb Meir, in addition to being chayiv misa for shechting on Shabbos or for shechting for avodah zarah, he also has to pay what's called dalad v'hei. Right? Dalad v'hei is the punishment that you pay if you steal someone's animal and then you slaughter it or sell it. You have to pay four or five times the amount, depending if it's a sheep or if it's an ox. Right? That's a whole discussion above a comma. Whereas according to the Chachamim, because you're chayiv misa for shechting on Shabbos or for avodah zarah, you're pater from paying the additional dalad v'hei. Fine. So the Gemara says ha'itmar Allah, Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Amrila, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Ila, v'chol chavurta mishvedi Rabbi Yochanan Amrei, betoveach al yedei acher. So the case that the Gemara says is where you basically appointed a shliach to shecht for you. So Reuven stole the animal on Shabbos or stole the animal for avodah zarah, but he told Shimon to go ahead and actually shecht it. So the question, of course, is v'chizechotiv is emeschayiv. If Shimon is the one who's shechting on Shabbos or shechting for avodah zarah, why is that on Reuven's head? So in other words, again, according to Reb Meir holds that even though you're chayiv misa, you have to pay. And the Gemara says, no, it doesn't really mean when you're chayiv misa. It means when the other guy, when the shliach did it, then Reuven has to pay. So the question is, yeah, but Shimon's the one who did the avera. We usually have a principle in halacha called ein shliach l'dvar avera. We don't appoint a shliach for something which is an avera. In other words, even if you tell Shimon to go be mechal Shabbos, that's not on you. That's on Shimon. That's his problem that he was mechal Shabbos. So the question is, why should I be chayiv for that? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Rava, Amar Rachamana, utvacho umicharo, ma mechira al yedei acher, av tevicha al yedei acher, devei Rabbi Yishmael tana, ola Rabbo says a shaliach, devei chizkiya tana tachas, the Rabbo says a shaliach. So again, there's three different possible sources, but basically the bottom line is that it's exeris akasa. The Torah basically says that there are different words in the pasuk, either because we compare it to selling, and just as by definition, selling requires two parties, so too in this case, when there are two parties involved, even though the shechita happened through someone else, you're still chayav to pay dalad v'hei, or because the word o, or the word tachas, whatever the source is, the bottom line is that it's exeris akasa, and in this case, you're going to still be chayav to pay dalad v'hei according to Rabbi Meir. Okay. Then the Gemara asks, maskeflo mar zutra, mi ika midi di ilu avad ihu lo mi chayav, avad shaliach umi chayav. So the Gemara says, hang on a second, how could there be a scenario where if I were to do this action myself, I would be exempt? In other words, everyone agrees, even Reb Meir agrees, that if I were to shecht an animal on Shabbos, let's say I stole and shechted myself, everyone agrees that I'm pater from dalad v'hei, even Reb Meir, because I'm chayav misa, right? It's only when Reb Meir only says that you're chayav when he did it through a shliach, right? That's the only time that he says that you're chayav. So, in other words, how could you tell me that if I did it myself, I'm putter, but if I do it through my shliach, I'm chayav? That's not usually how shlichus works. Usually shlichus basically means that the shliach has the same ability to do exactly what I can do, but not more or something beyond what I can do. So the Gemara says, no, ihu lav mishum de lami chayav, el mishum de kimli b'derabamine. The Gemara says, no, the only reason why you're chayav when the shliach does it is really for a technicality. In other words, the only reason why you're not chayav when you shecht yourself is because of kimli. In other words, technically speaking, you really should have been chayav to pay dalad vei. It's just that you got off the hook because you happen to be chayav misa. That's the reason why you're not paying dalad. Hey, but again, it's not to say that fundamentally speaking, you're not really chayav. It's just that there's a quirk in halacha that exempts you from paying. Okay, so then the Gemara asks, the obvious question is, if we're talking about a case where I appoint a shliach to shecht for me on Shabbos or for avodah zarah, then why do the rabbanon say that I'm pater from dalad v'hei? Of course I should be chayav in dalad v'hei. I'm not chayav misa. The shliach is chayav misa. So why on earth would the rabbanon say that I'm exempt from paying dalad v'hei if the shliach was the one who did it? So the Gemara says, no. This is the famous opinion of Rav Shimon that appears in several places in Shas. Rav Shimon is the one who holds the following, that what's called a shechita she'ena re'uya. If you shecht in such a way that it's not considered a quote-unquote proper shechita or a fit shechita, so Rav Shimon does not consider that to be a shechita at all. So the Gemara explains, so the Gemara says, that's all well and good when it comes to avodah zarah or a shor haniskal. So for avodah zarah, when you're shechting l'shem avodah zarah, that's not a proper shechita. When you're shechting a shor haniskal, so the din is that even, in other words, once an animal has had a gemar din, has had a verdict that it's now chayiv skila, even if you go ahead and shecht it properly, you're still not allowed to eat it. It's still asur bahana. The shechita doesn't help once there's a gemar din. So in that case, Rav Shimon will tell you that that's called a shechita she'ena ru'uya. It's not a real shechita, and that's the reason why you're going to be putter from dalad v'hei. However, what about shechting on Shabbos? The Mishnah Chulin tells us that that if a person shechts on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, even though you're chayiv misa for doing that, it's still considered to be, in other words, a proper kasher shechita. So the question is, so then why would Reb Shimon say that I'm going to be pater from Dalet Hey, that was a proper shechita? So the Gemara says, no. Savar laka Rabbi Yochanan Hasanler, Desanya, Hamevashal b'Shabbos b'shogeg yochal b'mezil lo yochal divir remeir, Rabbi Yehuda omer b'shogeg yochal l'motzai Shabbos b'mezil lo yochal olamis, Rabbi Yochanan Hasanler omer b'shogeg yochal l'motzai Shabbos l'achirin v'lo lo, b'mezil lo yochal olamis lo lo v'lo l'achir. There's a famous machluk, it's a three machluk that appears primarily in Masechta Shabbos, about what's called Maisa Shabbos. Maisa Shabbos means if a person went ahead and did malacha on Shabbos, whether b'shogeg, whether b'mezil, again, as the Gemara fleshed out all the details here, but basically the din is, let's say a person went ahead and cooked on Shabbos. Another question is, am I or anybody else allowed to derive benefit from that malacha that was performed on Shabbos? So according to Rameir, it depends. He says, if the malacha was done b'shogeg, so then anybody can eat it. If it was done b'mezid, then he cannot eat it. According to Rabbi Huda, if it was done b'shogeg, you can eat it on Motzei Shabbos. If it was done b'mezid, you're never allowed to eat that food. According to Rabbi Yochanan Hasanler, if it was done b'shogeg, so then other people can eat it on Motzei Shabbos, not the person who did the b'shogeg. Whereas if it was done b'mezid, then no one is ever allowed to eat it, ever. Not you, not others, not on Shabbos, not on Motzei Shabbos, you're never allowed to eat it. So the question is, my time at the Rabbi Yochanan Hasanler. Why does Rabbi Yochanan Hasanler make this distinction? So the Gemara explains, Ki didarish Reb Chiya pischa devei nesia, ushmartem es haShabbos ki kodesh hilochem. Ma kodesh asur ba'achila, af maisa Shabbos asur ma'achila. He draws a comparison from a pasuk in Parshas Kisisa to kodesh. So just as when it comes to kachim, so if you're not a kohen, you're not tohor, so it's asur to eat, so too maisa Shabbos. In other words, when a person went ahead and was machal Shabbos, you're also not allowed to eat the byproducts of that. So the Gemara asks, ima kodesh asur ba'hanaf, maisa Shabbos asur ma'ana. I would have said that just as kachim is asur ba'hanaf for a person who's not a kohen and tar in the mikdash, so perhaps maisa Shabbos is also similarly asur ba'hanaf. The Gemara says, no, tamal domer lachem, shalachem yehi. The Torah tells us otherwise. It says lachem, right? It says ki kodesh lachem. So you see that you're allowed to derive benefit from it. So the Gemara says, yachal afilu b'shogeg, tamal domer mechal leha mosimas, b'mezid amarti lachav alo b'shogeg. So you see from that expression that only when you violated Shabbos b'mezid do we say that it's asur ba'achila, but if it was only b'shogeg, so then it's going to be mutter b'hanaf.